Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing great, Justin. How are you?
I am wonderful. We have some meetups coming up. We have our meetup with Astonishing Legends, presented by Chasing Earhart. It's going to be at the Elks Lounge, 647, Thursday, July 19th from 8 to 10. I will also be in Philadelphia the 24th and the 25th at the Independence Brewery, pretty much around 7 o'clock-ish, no real time frames on those. Both nights, the first night, it's going to be Once Upon a Crime, The Vanished, Sword and Scale. The second night is a whole litany of indie podcasters. And then on August 1st, I'm going to be up in Toronto myself. Sorry, Aaron. I wish I could take you to Canada with me. And I'm going to be at the Monarch Tavern with Minds of Madness at 6 p.m. And we'll just hang out for however long. Sadly, I'm going to miss another Canadian crime podcast meetup up in Toronto. That's on the 22nd of July. The trail went cold. Canadian true crime, nighttime, dark topic, and our friends Insight and Already Gone. That's at the Hideout. I think tickets are $10. I won't be there, but I wish I was. What else we got going on, Aaron?
I recently did an interview with Catherine Ray Robinson, and she has a website. It's classifiedcrime.com, but it's classified with a K. I think it's a pretty good interview, so check it out at classifiedcrime.com. I want to give a special shout out to Faye McClure. Thank you. And I also want to say a special thank you to Kevin Gosden.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
If you're like me and refuse to let go of your skinny jeans, you're a millennial. And if you're a millennial, it's time to add Clarins Multi-Active Cream to your daily routine. Rooted in nature and innovated with science, Clarins has a long legacy of creating industry-first, plant-forward products. Using a skin charger complex made of 2% niacinamide and sea holly bioextract, Clarins Multi-Active Cream has been clinically proven to target the first visible signs of aging by smoothing lines and wrinkles, refining pores, evening tone and texture, and strengthening the skin's moisture barrier. While Multi-Active Cream can't bring back the golden age of boy bands, it can de-stress your skin. Clarins Multi-Active Cream is available online now. Go to clarins.com/truecrime and get Multi-Active Day and Night Cream for 10% off, a free welcome gift, plus free shipping on your first order. That's clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME. clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME. Looking for a fun and relaxing way to unwind? Download Two Dots, the free puzzle game with over 5,000 unique levels. Connect dots to solve colorful puzzles and collect rewards. With different gameplay modes like scavenger hunt and arcade, there's always a new adventure. Don't want a game alone? Connect and engage with the larger Two Dots community to match up your skills. If you're looking for the perfect game to help you relax but also keep you engaged, download Two Dots for free on Android and iOS.
So, speaking of Kevin, what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
We get many requests to cover missing persons cases, and there are so many of them. The disappearance of Andrew Gosden has been on my mind a bit, and I think it's because we've all been teenagers and misunderstood. I think that is a big part of this case. Andrew Gosden being a teenager who disappeared on Friday, September 14th of 2007. There are a lot of questions about who Andrew was, and the longer that his disappearance has continued, it seems like there are just more questions about who he was and what he was up to. Some background on Andrew Paul Gosden. He was born in 1993 in July, light brown hair, brown eyes. He was 14 years old at the time. He wore prescription glasses. He lived in South Yorkshire in England. As far as his physical appearance goes, he was 5'3", considered a smaller guy. He had a slim build. He had a distinctive double ridge on the side of his right ear. If someone were to spot Andrew out and about, if they looked at his right ear,
it'd be an identifying characteristic, definitely.
Absolutely. Unless his hair was grown over it and you didn't see the ears. Andrew was known to be a gifted mathematics student. He had great attendance, great grades. He was on the gifted and talented program, which means, you know, he was in the top 5% of the kids who were in his school. As far as what we knew of him, or what we know of him based on what his family has said, this is not a streetwise kid. So when we talk about Andrew leaving home unexpectedly, he's not exactly the type of person that they think he would be, you know, he'd be okay. That this is something that, you know, oh yeah, he does it all the time. No, he doesn't. This is a kid who is known to stay at home. A little background on his family. He had his dad, Kevin, and his mom, Glennis. He also had a sister named Charlotte, who was a couple of years older than Andrew. Charlotte was trained to be an accountant. So just like her brother, gifted in math. They didn't have a lot of money, I guess you could say, but they were still generous and were known to give about 15% of their income to charities. Their parents were Christians, and their father was a speech therapist. One other note about Andrew was that he was in Cubs and Scouts, although he left Scouts just months before he disappeared. All we know is that his dad said that Andrew wasn't finding the weekly meetings very interesting. He wasn't really looking forward to going anymore. Justin, let's go to the day of his disappearance, which was Friday, September 14th, 2007. What happened that day?
Well, that morning, it took his mother a few attempts to get him out of bed. Normally, he's very punctual and he has great attendance. So a little bit of a difference than a regular morning. He leaves the house for his school bus, and essentially the family thinks he's off to school because that's what you do. I guess they have school clothes, possibly a school uniform. He goes off and he waits at a local park until everyone else at the household has left. And then he comes back to the house. One of his neighbors actually has a closed circuit TV or security system that shows him walking back to his house. He takes off his uniform. Some reports say he places it in the washing machine and leaves his blazer on the back of a chair. He then changes into what he normally wears, which is a Slipknot t-shirt and black jeans. And he gets a bag, and his backpack has like metal bands and patches and stuff all over it. He took his wallet that has a big old keychain on it, his PlayStation Portable. That's a little gaming console that you can carry around. He doesn't bring the charger for it. He doesn't take anything else from the house. And he doesn't take a sweatshirt or a coat or jacket or anything. And this is September, though, so it's not too cold out, but I think we would just have a jacket with you. He leaves the house and he goes down to Littlemore Lane towards Westfield Park. He goes to a cash machine and withdraws £200 from his bank account. He had 214, but ATMs only let you pull out like denominations of 20, so he pulls out 200. He goes down to the railway station and purchases a one-way ticket to London. The ticket seller notices that this is a pretty young kid. That's a little odd for him to be out buying a train ticket on a school day. And he also offers him a return ticket. And the return ticket costs like £1 more or something. It's just like $1 more. You get to come home on that same ticket. And Andrew says no, he doesn't need a return ticket. So at 9:35 a.m., he's seen boarding the train from his hometown to King's Cross Station in London. Some witnesses say that they saw him board the train alone. He sat by himself, very quiet, and playing his PlayStation Portable at 11:20. It's about a two-hour trip. He arrives at London's King Cross Station. And then about 11:20 to 11:30 a.m., the last sighting is him on the security system at the King's Cross Station, leaving and going out to London. The school notices that Andrew is not in attendance, and they attempt to call the parents to check, because you know normally the parents call and say, my kid's not going to be in school today, so everything's fine. But if the kid isn't in school, the school will call. Well, I guess the office staff misdialed the number. It just rang, so they never knew that they'd called the wrong person, and the parents never were notified that Andrew hadn't attended class that day. That night, the family comes home. They start getting ready for dinner. Parents ask his sister Charlotte, hey, run upstairs, grab your brother. Dinner's ready. She comes back downstairs and says he's not in his room, and they start looking around. They start calling his very few friends that he has, and they call the school, and they realize that he wasn't in attendance. Nobody has seen him. It's about 7 p.m. that the family knows something's up, and they call the police. It's just a bad situation because they're working against the clock now. Like, time has already passed. Almost 8 hours has passed since they knew where he was.
And because he didn't get on the school bus, they start searching on their own. His dad and his sister head out, and they just go along that route that he would take to school and, you know, stopping along areas that they're concerned maybe he ended up, but they don't find him. And they don't find any evidence of him.
And drive around the neighborhood, drive around to the parks, drive to his school. That's the common sense move, because they don't know that he's bought a ticket to London and jumped on a train.
Within 3 hours of discovering that Andrew is nowhere to be found, there's a leaflet that is sent out letting people know, be on the lookout for Andrew Gosden.
So the family's searching his room, trying to figure out if they can find anything. They had a bus fare, I guess, box collection where the kids or anyone could take money out of the box and use it for public transportation. He also had, like, I guess, 40 pounds set aside. This money has not been touched. So the only money that he's taken is the ATM withdrawal that he did. So he has another additional $100 at home that he didn't bring with him. They see that his passport is there and that his jackets and whatnot are there. So it doesn't look like he's packed for a long trip or anything. And luckily, since his passport's there, probably unable to get out of the country. So that's a good sign.
They contact the authorities. And as part of their investigation, the police show up and search the Gosden's home. Several days later, though, it's confirmed after speaking to a woman at the train station that Andrew was sold a train ticket, a one-way train ticket to London. So this is their first break in the case. The family knows that he knows people in London, so maybe he's gone to visit friends or something.
Yeah, his grandparents live there, other family members, hopefully. But the fact that there hasn't been any call in several days and makes it seem like he never showed up, although we do know. But police and law enforcement, they don't check the security footage from the train station or any of these other places for weeks. And most places that have a security camera, that footage will overwrite or delete after just a few days, sometimes a week at most. So they are lucky that they're able to find some of this security footage from the train stations like a month later.
Usually investigators will look for an electronic trail to see if someone had been making internet searches or writing emails that would indicate what their plans were before they disappeared. And in this case, the family had bought a computer just 2 months before, and Andrew didn't have an email address, and he really didn't seem to use the computer. So when they searched that machine, they found nothing. They even went to the local library, so they don't have an electronic trail at that point to give them any idea why he would take off like that.
Yeah, if he had an Xbox, and I'm not exactly sure how a PlayStation Portable works, if you can chat with other people online, but he didn't have a mobile phone, so his ways of communicating are very limited. I would just assume that since we only have certain ways, they check the home phone, they know he doesn't have a mobile, they check with all the people he knows, all his family members, nobody knows where he's at. So it appears that he didn't talk to, or we can at least not confirm that he talked to anyone before he left that day. Nobody was planning with him that we know of. There are a couple other possible sightings that place Andrew on Oxford Street. The day he went missing, there was a Pizza Hut down there. Some people say that he might have gone in there and bought a slice of pizza. That same day, it said that there was a kid sleeping in a park right by there on September 18th. But these sightings, these things are coming in like after the fact, so they're kind of hard to confirm.
In November of 2008, a man visited a police station in Herefordshire, West Midlands. There wasn't an officer right there to talk to him. There was an intercom, though, and he used that. And he reported that he had information about Andrew Gosden. This was after hours, I guess you could say. And so an officer was dispatched, but when he got there, no one was there. So if someone did have information on Andrew, as was indicated, they don't know who it was, and they don't know how to get a hold of him. So the police had to say, hey, if you're the one that came and tried to report information about Andrew Gosden, we'd really like to hear from you.
Kind of creepy that somebody comes in and says they have information. Heck, we don't even know if it was Andrew himself, you know, because they were gone. It's all of these moments that are almost like opportunities for the family to find their son, and then they can't follow these leads.
Some believe the same individual, someone who claimed to be that person who was at the police station, you know, wrote a letter to the BBC after they covered the case on a show that they have. He gave some details about seeing Andrew in Shrewsbury in November of 2008. But again, this is just an indication that there is information, but we don't really have any good details. So what is this? Is this a prank, or what is it?
Who knows? I mean, this is the problem here. You can't confirm or deny if this was a valid lead. Kevin, his father, said that there's been multiple people that have come forward saying, oh, I'm your son, or I've seen your son, and none of them can be confirmed. But the people, obviously the people that are like, hey, I'm your son, they're just pranksters trying to take advantage of a really bad situation and kind of sick and disgusting way. But I mean, this family's hurting. They're missing their son. The family had asked a forensic psychologist to look in shortly after Andrew went missing. They said that there was an outside possibility that he could still be alive, but after more time passes, that possibility is dying out. So they're more or less accepted the fact that their son probably is not still alive. And that was sort of a hard hit to take for the family when this forensic psychologist comes back and says, the chances are pretty slim here. And I always wonder, when somebody goes missing, if they were to fall victim, you know, to foul play, if somebody were to murder them. I mean, this is London. There is wilderness or stuff outside the city, but what happens to bodies? You know, they get taken to the morgue. How good is the tracking system to say, hey, we have an unidentified body here. We're going to take fingerprints. Do they have a database or a system that they can run it off of, you know, or against missing persons? See if this is somebody that even has a criminal record, whatever. I don't know how good the systems are out there, but you would hope that they would be able to identify people. I'm sure that there are some cracks that people can slip through.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
Now, this forensic psychologist report has a huge effect on this whole investigation, because they weren't able to get a lot of information. They were able to understand, at least from the parents' perspectives, what Andrew was like, what his routines were like, what kind of person he was. But nobody knows why he went to London. Obviously, he was pulling some sort of a ruse, because everyone thought he went to go board the school bus, and he didn't do that. And he ended up coming home after everyone else had left, and he changed out to his street clothes. So without understanding where he was going, we don't know what his motivations are. And this psychologist report says, we fear he's probably dead, essentially. That's what his parents were concerned with. They were concerned that something had happened to Andrew. And of course, no one knows if this is a suicide, if someone attacked him. They just don't know. And that's part of what makes these missing persons cases difficult, is not knowing motivations. You don't know where they went or what they were up to. This psychologist's report affected the case. The police essentially say, you know, we don't really have any leads. And this report is saying that he's probably deceased. So we're going to scale this down.
They start pulling resources off of it. Depending on the police department and how big they are, some police departments, it's the same investigator that goes after homicide cases is assigned to missing persons cases. Other larger departments that have better funding, you have a narcotics department, you have a homicide department, and you have a missing persons department. Not sure how this was handled, but anytime you have a child that goes missing, it sucks because no matter what law enforcement does, if they're not finding your child, the family's not really thinking that you're doing your job or doing it well enough. They have taken issue with the fact that it took them almost a month to get the security camera footage of their son at the train stations. They have taken issue with the policies and the approach of the investigation. His father also took issue with the systems that law enforcement used. They were deemed sorely unfit for tracking anybody, or especially missing persons. They have since been upgraded, but at the time of the investigation, not the best systems to be using. They've also took issue with the reporting process and how they went to the house and searched around the house as opposed to searching the neighborhood or searching at the local hospitals or train station. It's just the way they go about it. But, you know, the way I see it is, well, the last time you saw him was at home, so that's where we're going to start.
Yeah, there are a number of criticisms against the police in this case. And, you know, to be fair, it's easy to find fault with the police when you're looking back. When the police are actively involved in investigation, a lot of them are doing what they can. They're doing what they feel they should be doing. And in this case, it's really easy to look back and say, well, they didn't do this right. They didn't do that right. When they had witnesses saying, oh, I saw him boarding the train at this time. And then they still weren't going to King's Cross. They were still focused on doing interviews. Some people would say, well, that's lost time. Or why didn't they go and get the footage that was from buses or other stations nearby? Why didn't they look for that stuff? I mean, they could have put together where Andrew was going, possibly, if they spotted him on us on some of these other cameras, but they're doing what they think they ought to do. If they're interviewing the family, I think if I were to try and see their side of things, I would imagine a big part of this is trying to understand what his motivation was for skipping school and leaving that day, or trying to better understand who Andrew was so that they could figure out where he would be going in London. London's not a small place.
No, it's not. It's huge.
And it would be easy for someone just to go there and get lost for a while. Yeah, I don't know. But I understand when a family has one of their own going missing, you can't help but start to see the holes in the case. And it's their right, you know? They're the ones that are hurting. The police are just trying to do their job.
In the UK, about 250,000 people go missing every year. That's like 850 people a day. Half of that number is between 15 and 21. So then under 15, you have about 70 kids going missing every day in London alone. So you have them not knowing where he went missing from at first. So they're in his hometown, and then realizing that he goes missing in London, which is this big city, which has a lot more missing persons cases, a lot more of a burden of trying to find these people. I can see how they're a little overwhelmed with trying to track this down. Now, when we're talking about his motivations, you know, I think he didn't bring the charger for his PlayStation Portable. This sounds like a short trip to me. and he didn't bring a jacket or anything. So again, my logic is he's not leaving for an extended period of time, but that's how I think an adult would think. Maybe he just didn't know how to pack. We're talking about a 14-year-old here. I'm trying to find the motivation. I guess there were some concerts going down in London that night. One band was Skith, I think it's pronounced that way. They're a metal band. He was obviously into Slipknot, so he's into metal. He's into some goth music and whatnot. It's possible he was going down to see a concert and he didn't want to tell his parents about it. He took money out for a train ticket, but a one-way train ticket. Maybe he was going to meet somebody at this concert and they were going to give him a ride home, or maybe he was intending to leave for an extended period of time. And that's what we're going to have to try to break down here.
Yeah, that's the question. Why would he leave money at home and then withdraw money at an ATM? And like you said, he withdrew 200, which is the max he could withdraw just because it was in denominations of 20. And he didn't take any of the money that he had available at home. So we really can't make sense of that. We don't know why he would leave his charger at home for his PlayStation Portable unless he didn't think he would need it. But why bring it? So it's a real question for me. I guess in this day of cell phones, you're always looking to charge it throughout the day, especially if you're on it a lot. And if he's traveling by train, I imagine he's probably playing that PlayStation Portable quite a bit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what's the battery runtime on that? He's going to need a charger, right?
Yeah.
If he's going to be gone for any significant amount of time, unless you could argue if he's just taking a train to London and then he's going to meet somebody, maybe he'll be talking with them and then he'll go to see a concert and then he figures maybe he can use it on the way back. But he refused his return ticket, which was just such a small amount more than what he'd already spent on the ticket. So what does that tell you? Does that tell you anything? I mean, my feeling is I don't know when I'm going to be back.
Yeah, yeah. And this is where I think, okay, is he running away permanently or is he just leaving for possibly a day or two and then coming home? He obviously left on his own accord. He wasn't being held by anyone. He wasn't being dragged down the street. He showed up to the train station himself. He bought his own ticket. So this is his intentions to do this. Now, what happens to him once he gets to London? Is it foul play? Is it him running off? Who knows? But he is very young. I remember when I was 13, 14, I thought I had the whole world figured out, but I didn't know anything. And I'm looking at this kid thinking, You're listening to Slipknot and all these bands. You definitely are mature for your age, but that doesn't mean that you can last a day or a week out on the streets of London. I have issues with him leaving the money at home because I just assume if he's taking off forever, why not take all the money at home? Why not take extra stuff? But I'm thinking logically like an adult, and this is a kid. What
it's
do you do?
It's easy to forget, Justin.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one thing that happened to me while reading up on this case, or I kept putting myself in the shoes of Andrew saying, oh, I would have brought that, and I would have brought that too. But I'm not a teenager.
When we were quickly discussing this, you said something to the effect of, well, how is he going to get a job? He's not even old enough, and da-da-da. How is he going to get more money? Why didn't he? And I'm like, yeah, no, he's not thinking like the way we would. 14-year-olds don't think about getting a job. That's not on their mind at all. It's music. It's having fun. It's playing their PlayStation or whatever. So what are some of the possibilities? What are some of the theories that people think here?
Well, a very popular one, and one that's sort of come up again recently due to a supposed run-in with Andrew online, is that he was gay and that he didn't think he would be accepted by his family. And, you know, he wanted to start living his life. His family are Christians, but I don't know how much water this theory holds. simply because when you take everything into account, I don't think there's any evidence that his parents would have been
strict.
Yeah, so unwelcome of his being gay that they would have kicked him out or anything like that. You know, his father has this page, Missing Andrew Gosden, on Facebook. Recently, he made a post about this. I think it speaks to the power of a parent who loves their child. He talks about if Andrew has left home because he didn't feel like he would be welcomed. Kevin clears the air about that and says, "We just want to know you're okay. So if you don't feel comfortable coming home, just let us know you're okay. Let someone know to let us know." They're worried sick about Andrew. And this has been going on 10 years now, easily. So if there are any questions beyond how they raised their children or even this post, I mean, this should all be cleared up by now that in the end, Kevin, Glennis, and Charlotte just want to know that Andrew's okay, no matter what his orientation is, no matter what kind of lifestyle that he has. So let's just go over the supposed run-in. Someone reported speaking with someone online who was looking for help. And it's because they said that their partner had left them and that they were stuck with the rent and they needed help. And so someone was like, "Sure, I could send you some money. Which bank do you use?" And the person who went by the nickname Andy Roo replied that they didn't have a bank because they left home when they were 14 and they just don't have anything like that. So you put that together and you think, wait a minute, that's possibly Andrew, because Andy Roo and having left home at 14, and it all just sort of adds up, right? Well, the problem with that is Andy Roo is a name, as far as I can tell, that's been held by several different people. There's a children's musician that goes by that name. There's even a story about a sex worker by the name of Andy Roo. And, you know, they're just different people with different stories other than Andrew. His family has said that was his nickname when he was young because he was this little guy, but he was quite bouncy. Andy Kangaroo kind of tied together Andy Roo, you know. So it's possible, you know, if you think that you can't live your life and you don't think you can live it
under your parents' roof,
you're out, right? And you don't give a damn about what comes tomorrow, as long as you can be who you want to be. I get it. I get that desperation. But in his case, when you look over how his parents conducted themselves, I don't know that you could find more open-minded people, because I've read that they didn't even baptize their kids because they wanted their kids to make up their own minds about whether to be Christians or not.
Yeah. And if Andrew and Charlotte didn't go to church, if they wanted to skip, parents didn't mind. If they, you know, Andrew quit the Scouts a few months before, parents were accepting of this. It doesn't sound like they're really pushing any sort of agenda on their children. Now, even with that said, perception's reality, and if he felt like his parents wouldn't accept him for his orientation, wouldn't accept him for his music or his interests or just himself, he could perceive a rejection and say, "I'm out of here." Maybe he took off and was like, "I'm going to come back in a couple of days. I'm just going to go see this concert," whatever. And then now he's fearing, "Oh, I'm going to get in trouble. I don't want to come home. I don't want to have to explain myself." And then another day passes, and then another day passes. I mean, I have this problem with some friends where I'm like, "Oh, I haven't called them in a while. Now it's weird." It's possible, but for him to go completely underground and never to be seen again for this long in the face of his parents and their movement to find their son, I mean, all over the media, TV, flyers, I would just think, you see what you put your family through, you would at least want them to know that you're okay, even if you feel like you weren't going to be accepted. But again, there's nothing that his family really did that's apparent that they weren't accepting of their children. His father went on to pass out flyers at concerts. Muse was playing and he was out there passing out missing persons posters of his son because his son had a shirt. He goes to metal concerts and asks around, which I would just assume that if he was that hardcore Christian, he wouldn't want to rub shoulders with these types of people, but he's embracing it and going out and putting himself out there trying to find his son.
Another theory says that Andrew was unhappy and that he left to take his own life somewhere far away from his family.
Well, and I think of all the other missing persons cases we've covered, and that's a thing where you're like, I'm done here. I'm going to not put everyone through the pain and suffering of my suicide. The kid showed zero signs for this theory, although people do this all the time and don't give any hints, but for the most part, he didn't seem to be depressed.
Yeah, that's where you'd say it is possible.
Yeah.
But how probable is it? And just based on the information that we have, and again, we got a lot of information from Andrew's family, isn't any indication there. The only thing I could come up with when looking over the information that we have, which is, you know, there were no mental health issues that were known with Andrew. He was very active with his school, excellent grades. He was at home a lot, and he didn't have any issues with anybody at school that anybody knows of. The only thing I can come up with is sometimes people get dissatisfied and they're not telling you about it, but they're unhappy. Mm-hmm. And depression can be a very personal thing. People can hide their depression. I don't know. I would say it is possible that Andrew was depressed and that he was taking a one-way trip. And so I wouldn't rule it out. I would say based on what the family has said and what other people have said who have known Andrew, that's not real high on their lists. But again, I think we have to keep it as a possibility simply because of that one-way ticket and the fact that he hid this trip from everyone. So it was very secretive.
I guess he was a fan of this British sitcom, The Fall and Rise of Reginald Perrin. Man who's having a midlife crisis and he fakes his own death, takes on a new identity. So kid runs off. I mean, he's not really faking his own death though. And I don't know if he can really come up with that much of a plan. Not something I would expect a 14-year-old to come up with. I would expect them to grasp the concept. But as far as execution wise, I don't see that happening.
Right. I mean, how does he, he could start this in motion, but carrying it through successfully, that seems like a tall order for a 14-year-old. I'm not trying to demean his intellectual capacity at all, because this was obviously a very, very bright kid. But still, at 14, there are just certain things that you just don't know yet that you would need to know to pull off something like this, I would think. Well, unless you had outside help.
Yeah. I mean, he's book smart, but street smart, uh-uh.
Right. And that's a missing component here. Yeah. It's like anything else. You can have a plan until you get hit in the face.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying you got hit, but I'm saying it's as soon as something doesn't go your way that alters your plan, that could be a problem. So this is a theory that I think we need to talk about because, again, it's a missing persons case. We don't know what his motivations were. This is something that was, I guess, in the realm of possibilities because he was a fan of the sitcom. So I think it bears mentioning.
And what was the name of the train station he arrived at in London?
King's Cross.
Yeah, and that has an association with Harry Potter, I guess.
Yeah, I haven't seen all of the Harry Potter movies all the way through, but the characters would go there in order to travel to Hogwarts. And so they would literally go through, I guess, a wall at the station.
Yeah.
And then they would, yeah. So it's so weird that he could very well be disappearing in a place where characters in the Harry Potter movies would disappear to travel to somewhere else.
And he was a fan, I guess, of the books. So there's a tie in there, but I mean, if you're going to London by train, you're probably going to end up at that station. So I don't really put a lot of stock in that one.
Now, speaking of Harry Potter, there are some things that need to be mentioned related to Harry Potter and Andrew's disappearance. The PlayStation portable video game for one of the Harry Potter books came out on July 29th, 2007. One of the movies from Harry Potter came out on July 21st, 2007. And the last book in the series came out July 21st, 2007. So there's a lot of Harry Potter activity right there at the end of July. And he goes missing in September. So again, this could all just be coincidence. But even his dad said he doesn't think that he was real deep into Harry Potter. Probably more of a casual interest.
Yeah, because that sounds like some deep reading Harry Potter fan stuff there, where the King's Cross station and these books, and like that's a rabbit hole that I'm sure some people went down, but I don't see him planning or into it. And if his father's saying that he was a casual reader, then that doesn't really put as much emphasis on that either.
And he dressed in a Slipknot t-shirt.
Yeah.
Not exactly a Harry Potter feel.
No.
And, you know, that also strikes me is that he was considered to be a smaller guy. He was 5'3" and a slim build. And yet he's into this really powerful, aggressive music.
Well, yeah.
I'm not saying that's unheard of. I'm just saying, you know, sometimes we probably don't want to be who we are. I mean, you and I listen to some pretty aggressive music, but do you think there's anything to this that he's listening to that kind of music and he's maybe heading off to see a concert? I mean, this would be a break of protocol for him. He normally would tell his parents where he was going. He always stuck to his routine with school, perfect attendance, great grades, you know, all A's. Is there something about Andrew here that we don't understand because maybe he is going through a change?
Well, yeah, he's a small kid. He's hitting puberty. There's no reports of him being bullied at school, but being a metalhead and of smaller stature, I could see him not being the popular kid, not getting the attention he wants if he wants that kind of attention. I listened to Slipknot, Skiff, and Muse all week long, just sort of putting my head in a 14-year-old's head, listening to that angsty teen music, thinking, is there something more to this? I think that it is powerful music, and it gives you that feeling of invincibility. It gives you that feeling that it's a good feeling. The metal community is actually very accepting, so it's probably why he listened to it. He was hanging out with anyone that was also into metal music. Well, they're very accommodating and very welcoming.
So maybe he didn't leave for some reason tied in with Harry Potter, but maybe he left to go see a metal concert.
Yeah.
And again, if he's going to London, even if he knows people there, it may not take him long to get into some trouble because he isn't so streetwise.
I wouldn't walk around London by myself. Now I'm in my 40s. I don't know the town. I don't know anything about it. I wouldn't have a clue if there's a bad part of town, a good part of town, or anything. And stranger in a strange land. I'm not a 14-year-old who thinks they're invincible either.
But even if he didn't, he goes to London, we know that much, and he is a smaller guy, and he's not streetwise. I mean, he's a young kid. So he goes to London. Now you can just throw in all these other possibilities of bad things that could happen to him. And as soon as my mind starts going down that rabbit hole, man, I feel for his parents.
And if he's sleeping in a park, well, he's a target. If you're a predator looking to rob somebody, well, this kid, easy pickings.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
So as we went through the theories, we obviously gave some sort of indication on how probable they were, but where do you fall, Justin? Obviously, we can't know exactly what happened to Andrew because he remains missing, but where do you fall on this? What do you think is most likely? What do you think happened to Andrew Gosden?
My initial knee-jerk reaction was he was planning on coming home. But I'm torn on that because I feel like, well, he was planning on coming home because he didn't pack this. He didn't pack that. But then again, I'm a responsible adult, so that's what I would pack. And then the more I'm thinking he didn't get a return ticket, that kind of outweighs the not grabbing other money, not grabbing a jacket, and just defaulting to he's a 14-year-old. He doesn't know how to pack. He doesn't know how to take care of himself, but he does know what a return train ticket is, and he didn't buy it. So I'm thinking he ran away on purpose, obviously, for whatever reasons he had. And it's either that he wanted to go see concerts and go live a lifestyle of his own, or he was unhappy and didn't tell anybody, but he ran off on his own. Because of the push from his family and everything, and because of the lack of any sort of evidence that his family was terrible. I mean, they seem like a great family. I wish they would have raised me. At that point, I would just assume that he would want to let them know that he's okay. Even if he doesn't want anything to do with them, he would just be like, well, I've put my family through hell, and I want to make sure that they get some sort of closure. The fact that he hasn't done that, which who knows if that matters, but the fact that he hasn't done that makes me believe that he fell to some sort of demise. And I hate to not hold out hope here, but it's been over 10 years now. But then I come back to, well, if he did get killed or have some sort of terrible accident, why wasn't he identified at that point? How was he lost forever, especially in a place like London? But we don't know if he stayed in London or moved on. So it's one of those things where it's, I feel like he ran away on purpose, but then something bad happened after that fact.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm one of those people when someone goes missing and they continue to be missing for a long, long time, I usually default to, I don't think they're around anymore, because many of these people are good people and they show concern for their family, etc. But in this case with Andrew Gosden, for me, it's also the return ticket situation added in with the fact that he deceived everyone. He let them think he was getting on a bus and he didn't get on the bus. And he went back home, changed his clothing, and then left. I think, or if they had seen his uniform, they had to know something there. I would think at some point they would see that uniform and know he changed his clothing and he had tricked us. I don't think we should take that lightly. I don't think this is a kid who just decided, I'm going to see a concert. This is someone who broke his normal routine in a major, major way. I don't think that you could look at this and say he needed a weekend break.
This is an angsty teen. They have all kinds of impulsive behavior.
You can look at him and say, wow, for all those years, he got all these great grades. He was in the top 5th percentile of students and very reliable. But again, this means something that he deceived everyone and left the way he did. So in this case, I don't know that I could come up with how he did this or how he continues to do it, but I almost feel like he's still out there. That when he left his family behind. But I think sometimes when you cut people off, you're not necessarily upset with them. You just need to cut them off for you. I mean, I couldn't do that, I don't think. But there are people who have. And someone like Andrew, who did it when no one was expecting it, I think we're learning that there's more to Andrew than anybody knew. And that's kind of sad, because when you don't understand someone's motivations, then you find out maybe you didn't really know them at all.
Well, obviously, this is really tough on the family. His father, Kevin, I can't even imagine what they're going through. But Kevin fell into a fit of depression, which obviously, right? And he lost his job. His life kind of spiraled out of control for a bit. There are reports that he tried to take his own life out of guilt because, you know, he's blaming himself for his son's disappearance. Because of his son's disappearance, he is no longer the father he wanted to be. He can't hold the family together. He's not raising his daughter the way he wants. He's not being the husband he wants to be. I can only fathom what's going through this man's head. And he's done everything in his power to try to bring his son home. He, I guess, has got it together enough where he's still active. He's still out on social media posting and still trying, right?
Yeah, I think this is one thing I've learned by interacting with people who have a missing family member. Knowing that they're trying has got to help in some small way. And you never really want to give up hope. I know that we've mentioned how the family has said that they fear he is dead, but I don't know if it's exactly changed. But when you continue your efforts, even after the police have said, well, we're not closing the case, but we're winding it down until we get a break. As long as you're trying, as long as you're getting his name out there, telling his story, working with the age progressed photographs and things like that, you're keeping his memory alive and you're continuing to get that message out there that Andrew Gosden needs to let his family know where he's at. Or they need a break in the case. If you had ever talked to him, they need to know about it. And I think that's the struggle. You know, he's gone. If he did remove himself from their lives, he's essentially dead. But they don't want it to stay that way. And that's why when you're passionate about something, you fight for it. And I really get the sense that despite all the ups and downs and the struggles this family has gone through, they are continuing that fight because in the end, what matters most, beyond all their theories, beyond all their concerns, their own feelings of guilt, what matters most is bringing Andrew home.
During their searches, they're obviously checking out the neighborhoods and whatnot, but they also are running sonar in the rivers and waterways. They end up finding a body. Now, it's not Andrew, but at least we can find a silver lining here where maybe somebody else will be able to find their loved one, get closure. This other body they found, it belongs to Alexander Slowly.
Yeah, he had disappeared after visiting a friend in Enfield in July of 2008. He was an accountancy student. So like Andrew, he was very strong in mathematics, and he was someone who didn't bring the things you would think you would bring if you were going to plan a disappearance, plan to go away for a while. And he had a great attendance record. This is not someone who just disappeared for days at a time or anything like that. This was just 10 months after Andrew went missing. Well, because this is still an open case and they've never found Andrew Gosden, there were questions put to his father, Kevin, so that we could get some more information out there about Andrew, at least as far as what they knew of him back then. Maybe it will help with this case. Maybe it will help with someone who may have come across him or had spoken with him in some way, either online or in person somehow. Kevin was asked about Andrew's friends, what they were like. And Kevin responded by saying that Andrew had a small group of friends in school, but he didn't really socialize with them outside of school so much. He spent a lot of time at home, and he doesn't really know what they did for fun. He said that because they were all in the same age group and everything, it was sort of what he would consider the social niche. He said his daughter wasn't so dissimilar from Andrew either. That's all we know about his friendship. So again, when you talk about someone who's planning to disappear, it doesn't sound like he had any strong friendships that would tug at him either. Not to say that the family stuff wouldn't have tugged at him, but at least looking outside the home, it didn't look like there was anything there that would keep him there. He was known to be very neat and tidy. Kevin kind of laughed about this because said his daughter is not neat and tidy. Andrew had some hobbies that included snooker. He actually had a half-size table in his room, which was all they could get in there because his room wasn't very big. He also collected rocks and minerals, and he would polish those rocks. He did read a lot, and one of his favorite authors was John Grisham, and he also read Jeffrey Archer. He did enjoy video games. We know that.
And if he played on his Xbox, that to me is the only way he could have communicated with somebody in London or anywhere else in the world.
Talking about his schooling, Kevin said he felt that Andrew was pretty neutral about school, and he thought that might have been tied to his intelligence. And he said that he remembered a time when Andrew came home from summer school. It was a summer school for gifted kids. He was pretty enthusiastic about microbiology. They noticed this because they don't remember him ever being that excited. He felt like Andrew could cruise in school. He could literally just show up. You know, he would pick stuff up and he would retain it. School came easy for him. There was hopes that the upcoming academic year, there would be additional options, learning a new language or statistics, that maybe that would pique his interest more, something more challenging. Talking about his mood, I think was interesting because Kevin said that when he was asked about, you know, did he ever have mood swings like a teenager would have or more so, was he level-headed? And Kevin answered by saying inert would be nearer the mark. So he said that Andrew just didn't get mad about anything ever. They said the only time you'd see him animated was when he was getting funny. So he wasn't known to be moody. They considered him a pretty deep character and would think about a lot of deep subjects and would discuss them with you. It just speaks to his intellectual abilities, I think. They really felt like he was going somewhere. But with his disappearance, again, that's another thing with the parents is you have these hopes and dreams for your kids. And wow, they're looking at Andrew and their daughter, Charlotte, and thinking, wow, we've got some pretty good kids here. They're getting great grades. They're bright kids and they're very responsible, but one of them is now missing. One other important thing I'd like to bring up is Kevin was asked about what Andrew wanted to do with his life. What did he want to do for a living? Where was he going? Well, you know, you can't blame a kid at 14 for not knowing where they're going. I mean, I didn't know where I was going at 17. Did you, Justin?
No. I had no clue. Most school counselors told me that I should go into Votech or something where I worked with my hands because they had zero support for me getting into anything that was intellectual. Although right out of high school, I got into computers and became a high-end computer technician, but whatever.
Yeah, I think it's really tough to know where you're headed. And I think there's this idea that just because Andrew or anyone else who is of his intellectual abilities is somehow gifted as well in reading where they want to go in the future. And I think that's something that really is something that needs to be mentioned here, that a 14-year-old is still a 14-year-old. It doesn't matter what kind of grades they get, what kind of capabilities you think they have. They still have a lot of their life ahead of them. And it's difficult to say where they want to be at in 5 years and 10 years. Kevin was asked about what they found in his room. He said that they were very surprised that they found cash vouchers that he had won at school. Now, I don't know what the amount of these vouchers were, but Kevin said they were never spent. It's like he got them and didn't use them. And maybe it's because, you know, it's like the attendance record thing. He didn't want to be honored for that. He just wanted to accomplish it. And so maybe these cash vouchers didn't mean anything to him, even though it was money. We've talked in the past about missing persons cases. And when you have a large city that deals with a great number of people whose families are looking for them and reporting about them, let's be honest, the police really can't solve all these cases. There are too many of them. I mean, I feel for the Gosden family. They continue their efforts and they have a massive amount of support, I think, although you can always use more, trust me. When you're looking at the police and criticizing them, you know, what can they do in a case like this? You already gave some crazy numbers for how many people go missing. Even if you knock that down to 10% of that, it's still overwhelming.
Yeah, for all these law enforcement agencies to tackle this, to run down all those leads, I think you need to hire about 1,000 more. That's just for missing persons alone. That's not counting all the other crime and other investigations they have to do.
I guess what I'm left with, I understand why the police have to scale down an investigation, but we as the public, if we are in an area where we could help out a family or something like that, if we've heard about a case, if there's any possibility that we have some information that might be useful, that's where we can help out. It's like anything else. If it's worth doing, we should do it. And as a public, maybe we can help this family. So if you're in the London area, or if you've been online and think that maybe you've somehow spoken with Andrew, if possibly he's still around, I think it's worth going to their Facebook page, getting involved in some way. If you have some information, if you have any thoughts on what might help them, get in touch with them, because they haven't quit looking for Andrew. And if there's anything that you can do to help out, that would be great.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.